recorded live from the lobby of the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C.
Over the last few decades, museums have been evolving from catalogs of history to immersive storytelling spaces, but museums still struggle to compete for our attention while staying true to their role in preserving and projecting our cultural heritage and values. The American Institute of Graphic Arts, or AIGA, hosted a panel on this very discussion, and we were lucky enough to have a follow-up conversation with Josh Goldblum of Blue Cadet and Richard Bentham of the National Museum of the American Indian.
I think it's really incumbent upon museums to think about the entire visitor journey and like not be so pretentious about it that like, oh no, like, you know, this like Saul LeWitt piece like should be able to speak for itself, or, you know, you should be able to read this 50,000 words I've stuck on a wall and then build a resonance in situ with that piece. Like, no, a lot of times that's not gonna work. You gotta build it outside.
My name is Richard Bentham. I'm an exhibition designer at the Smithsonian's National Museum of the American Indian.
I'm Josh Goldblum. I'm the founder and CEO of Blue Cadet. We're an experience design agency based in Philadelphia, New York.
And I always ask myself, like if we erased all of like the past history of like what a museum can be, and we had to start with like what we know today, what would that look like and what would it be?
I take a pretty broad definition of what a museum is. But I think what's interesting is if you look at museums, they have like incredible levels of trust. So people trust them more than they trust their government, for absolutely great reasons, more than they trust journalism, which I think is also probably fair, and more than they trust entertainment. You know, because ultimately, I think they do hold themselves to an incredibly high standard. They have like sort of a code of ethics, some that's like encoded, some that's not. That means like when they tell you something, that it has been fully vetted and like that you can trust it. You know, they have academic credibility. Yeah, I think museums have a struggle because a lot of them are in just massive buildings. You know, so, you know, we have this situation where the Franklin Institute is a big science museum up in Philadelphia, and they're going through a master planning process right now, thinking about how to redo that entire space. But you're looking at something that's like hundreds of thousands of square feet. And you're like, well, is there even a use case where you need like hundreds of thousands of square feet? Like, it's like, is it really incumbent upon you to fill every single corner of this thing with exhibitry, or like or then what are you supposed to do? Just block it off from the public? And like, honestly, I think people have to start thinking about like, okay, what are other things that we can do? What are other ways we can use the space? And then how do you get people like invested in the space? Like, I think the Exploratorium does an amazing job out in San Francisco of having like a maker lab that's very public, yeah. Where they're constantly creating. And I think, you know, whether it's a school, whether it's a co-working space, whether it's a maker lab, I think having people creating and generating ideas just brings a certain amount of energy into a space that's better than just like filling it with a bunch of broken exhibits.
Yeah, and if you're going to do something like that, you need to really commit to it, not
totally.
Just say like, okay, the space closet back there, we're going to make it into like a maker space. Like, it doesn't work.
Totally. Know? They're like, oh, well, you know, like, we'll just like use our fold-out tables and our linoleum floors, and like, this is a creative space. I'm like, no. I think museums need to be thinking much, much bigger about, you know, how they can impact their audiences. One of the things that I've been trying to talk to museums a lot about is trying to say, like, look, you know, a museum is not a building. The National Museum of the American Indian is a building. You know, you can visit there, but it doesn't have to be the entirety of its brand. You know, it can be operating well outside the walls. It can be doing things like that are much broader, and that their impact might be much broader. And that if you think about like what is the big, hairy, audacious goal for a Museum of the American Indian, it might not just be driving attendance. It might just be like driving those stories as broadly and deeply as you can, so that kids, you know, that might never make it to the, or adults, anybody who might not make it to the museum, are really steeped in that content. And I say go anywhere, man. I do not think it's a waste of time for a museum to be working on podcasts. You know, I think VOD, like platforms like Netflix and, you know, Amazon, they're driving crazy, crazy amounts of content to crazy numbers of people. These institutions should be in there. I mean, like, American Indian should be in those platforms because they should be thinking really broadly about how they reach people. And then part of their conversion might be bringing them to their sort of like signature temple, you know, like the same way that Disney brings people to the Magic Kingdom or on a boat. Disney and Epcot and themed entertainment in general, I think, is getting to be more influential over museum thinking. I think actually those worlds haven't collided as much as they should. There are instances of it. So, for example, the Hedema Group, which does a tremendous amount of themed entertainment, did this 4D theater at the National World War II Museum. You know, the experience there is really amplified. It feels powerful and theatrical. I think the Holocaust Museum was very theatrical, and I think it didn't take a lot of cues from themed entertainment. I think it took a lot of cues from theater. But I think that we're starting to see with other spaces, these other experiential spaces, whether it's Meow Wolf or Color Factory or Museum of Ice Cream or the Museum of whatever the hell they're doing these days, you're seeing that there's a lot of play, kind of pulling different references from other places that are not museums and kind of recontextualizing what it could be to be a museum. I think that's actually maybe going to back channel eventually some of the more institutional museums. If you look at science centers, most of their revenue is earned revenue. So they actually have to drive attendance through the door. But then you end up seeing them making crazy compromises. So they're doing Jurassic World exhibits, they're doing Marvel, they're doing Lego, like things that have like honestly nothing to do with science. The threat there is that like, okay, well, if you force museums towards earned revenue, they're going to start making these really nasty compromises and selling out. The problem is that without some sort of feedback loop like revenue, they can just stay completely static and they can be very like happy with themselves while completely losing ground to everybody else. You know, and like honestly, I don't think that museums need to have like revenue as their primary metric, but I think engagement is one that they really should be paying attention to. I think it's pathetic that like the Whitney, I don't think they have any YouTube videos that have more than like 20,000-30,000 views. But meanwhile, Vox can put out, you know, a video completely on the same content, you know, that's telling the same stories and get millions and millions of views. Curators are like the most interesting people you will ever have dinner or drinks with. Yes. And they'll tell you amazing stories. You know, get a couple cocktails and them, amazing stories. You get them, you know, writing a wall label or, you know, on a podcast and like they just dry up and like suddenly they're back giving their academic dissertation. Just like basic qualitative, like, does this feel like a good story? Do people talk about it? Do people like it? Or will someone actually sit through it? Like, that's the sort of stuff that I'd be paying more attention to. I think there's actually a lot of cynicism around the Instagram moment, and rightly so, because I think some of those experiences are absolutely trash. I went to the Museum of Weed, which was done by like, Weed Maps and Vice in LA, and it's absolute trash. And like, there's things about the Museum of Ice Cream, which I think are inspirational, but also trash, because there's no there. It doesn't actually reflect back on anything that's like deeper. Museums are like deep. They're like significant. You know, like they're not vacuous institutions. They have something to say, and they have a lot of depth. And I actually think that they should be embracing some of this Instagram stuff, because the thing is, what the Instagram stuff really is about peak moments. And if you look at other forms of media or like other forms of storytelling, they have peak moments. I mean, every Hemingway novel has its peak moments. Every film has its peak moments. It has moments that you know, you remember. And I think that museums should lean into those powers of those moments and make sure that they can capitalize on those moments. If not to be documented, then just to be interesting.
I don't know if everybody remembers the Wonder exhibit at the Renwick, which basically took their objects and scattered them around the district. I feel like that's kind of like feeds into that like Instagram culture, but also kind of like breaks the walls of the exhibition space and the museum space and kind of like spreads it around.
Like in the same way that I support not having vacuous people, you know, I think not having vacuous spaces is really important. And I think some of these experiences are vacuous spaces. I think they're consumptive. They're driven by extracting money for attention. And they're like, it's a kind of a gross transaction. I think the museums actually do want you to learn something and drive you deeper into like a kind of these rabbit holes of knowledge. And like, that's awesome. But I think they could be a lot less boring.
The American Institute of Graphic Arts advances design as a professional craft, strategic advantage, and vital cultural force. As the largest community of design advocates, they bring together practitioners, enthusiasts, and patrons to amplify the voice of design and create the vision for a collective future. For more information, visit dc.aiga.org. And thanks for listening.